Mr. Hay, reel 14. We're talking about a service they had for the Greek liaison officer who was killed. Would you like to continue?
Yes. We were to play a game of football that day with a local Greek team. And the liaison officer, came and asked if the service could be back. Well, the football match could be put back. I said, well, the service must go on. You don't interrupt the service for a football match. All right. And so we went to the service for this liaison officer. I've never seen so many civilians and people. The church was crowded and immense crowds outside. And it was a really nice service. Gradually, the people disappeared. Various people, there was oratory. And in the end, I was left with a few dignitaries, and so I said, can I leave now? Yes, I could leave. And I heard the shouting, the football match should be on all the time. Oh, that's just one of these little things. But yes, we didn't have any casualties with the mines, that's what I told you, once we were.
And I believe that the armistice was signed with ELAS around 19th of January. That wouldn't affect you terribly, I presume. And after that, did you get on better with all the Greeks?
Yes. Oh, yes. The civilians were, of course, terrified of these, what were just mercenaries who come in. They weren't their local troops. These chaps have just been waiting for their opportunity.
So once the truce was signed, or the armistice, they were all right, were they?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very good.
Did you enjoy the last period of time in Greece when things had come?
Yes. Oh, yes.
What sort of recreations were you?
I don't think there was much cinema. I don't think it was just the nice weather, and I don't think we did anything special. We obviously had a bit of cleaning up to do around the countryside, but they brought in their own local troops to clean up the minefield.
So it's just a pleasant time.
Yes.
Before we leave Greece, I'd just like to go through one incident again, which I thought perhaps we didn't cover quite fully. I missed a couple of points. This was the attack on your battalion headquarters by a large crowd of ELAS supporters. Now, where exactly were the battalion, roughly speaking, where were the battalion headquarters at that time?
The battalion headquarters were in the middle of the distance between the port area and the main road up to Athens. And we, as a battalion, had been pushed down to the seafront. And we were then, our job was to keep open this one road on the seafront, and some were in houses. The battalion headquarters was in a small villa, and just next door there was a block of flats where the cooks and clerks met.
And that was a three-story?
That was a three-story flat. Concrete, I remember. At this time, for some reason or another, the colonel was away, and Major Reggie Denny was in charge. So I was kept at battalion headquarters as a second in command. And on the night in question, I had been along the front to visit the outer companies, and I came back and put the jeep behind the block of flats where there was some open ground, about 100 yards by 100 yards, roughly. I went into the battalion headquarters and just laid down to rest. We didn't take our clothing off. When a bullet came through the window, and then we could hear other fighting outside. So when I was getting a bit worse, and we tried to find out what it was, were gathered that there was a very strong party of Elites had congregated outside this open area, but behind a stone wall. So Dennis asked me to go and take command of the storage block, and so I went in and took what men I could find in open positions, but of course there were targets by the window. So we got up to the flat roof, and I said, what ammunition have we got? Well, being a battalion headquarters, we didn't have any ammunition, and I said, well, look around for anything we can get, because we were then coming under a very heavy attack, and these people were shouting. The civilians who were still on the top floor were trying to tell us that they were going to blow.
Now, who exactly were these civilians? They were.
It was just a family with two kids.
They were actually living in the block of flat.
Yes.
Now, what they said, they were trying to blow the block up. How did they know what was happening?
Well, they were interpreting, because these Elites were telling us to surrender, because they would blow the block up. And at that time, we could hear hammering and knocking. There were so many, and we really couldn't disperse them, because the angle for rifle fire from the top was too acute. They were down really only.
So they were actually not setting charges in the lower walls. Which of the villa or of the block?
No, of the block. The villa wasn't so much under attack, they were attacking the block. And I always carried two or three grenades when I was out patrolling, and I think I had four grenades. So I had to wait until enough of these Elas killers came into view before I held a grenade, and these were very effective, and you could see them going down. And then I just had to wait. There was still knocking going on down below and firing at the windows.
Did they actually charge the building at all?
No, they didn't charge, but they were creeping forward, and when they thought our firing had gone down, because we didn't have much to fire.
Were they creeping from the open ground or from in front?
They came from over the wall. There was a very sturdy wall at the other end of the open ground facing. Yeah. But there seemed to be crowds behind them.
So they were coming past your jeep?
Yes, my jeep was underneath.
Underneath the bed. Yeah. Did they damage it at all? Just as a side?
It was crushed. Well,
I'll find out, yes.
Yes.
So they were coming from behind the headquarters, then?
Yes, and there were an awful lot. We didn't know how many at that time, but there were an awful lot, hundreds. I don't know how they could all get together, because they didn't have fields of fire, but they were all raging and shouting and this, that, and that.
Did you radio for help at all?
No, we weren't in radio contact, because there was nobody who knew that the other companies were being attacked. In fact, they had overcome the company that was protecting us, and through knowledge of the place, and from when the Germans had been there, every house had a passage to another one, and so there was a lot of tunneling, and that they'd come forward, and they in fact took a whole platoon of our soldiers.
So there was no point, there was no one to ask for help from?
They were all looking after themselves, because this is what we heard. They were going to drive us into the sea. They've been saying that for long enough.
What, you heard the knocking, and there was nothing you could do?
No, couldn't get fire down at them. The only thing I had, these sort of four grenades. So I waited and waited until there were enough, and then threw another grenade, which was really effective. Anyhow, these people were screaming and shouting, "We're going to blow, we're going to blow up," and sure enough, I kept one grenade, because there were concrete stairs coming upstairs. We were, by that time, all, I thought we were all upstairs, obviously we And I thought, well, I'll keep this one going here just at last resort when the child's just stairs.
Were you actually on the roof then?
I was on the roof.
A flat roof?
Yes.
Nothing overlooked that then?
No. And there was a parapet, you know, we could keep behind. So unless they had mortars, they couldn't catch us. Anyhow, there was this hammering going on down below, and I kept going down to see how the others were. There were only about 20 people in the flats, I think. Anyhow, then the explosion went off, and the whole of the outside of the flats collapsed, just like a cardboard box. And of course, one of the casualties was my Jeep. And then they charged.
So, what about you on the top floor? Did that collapse?
I moved down. I think when the actual thing went up, I moved down, and I think I was stunned by some masonry. I can't have had my tin hat on because I had a gash across my head. And we heard some of the chaps shouting down below, so some were buried in the rubble. But anyhow, white flags appeared shortly from the mob, and they wanted to collect the wounded. So by this time it was getting on towards morning, so we waited until they collected the wounded. In fact, we didn't have anything to fire at them. And then we started to come across.
When the building collapsed, so not all the top collapsed, just one.
It was the outer. If this went up three times, this outer part, they blew the foundations away, and the outer floors just collapsed. And so we were a bit further back, or able to move further back.
And you say they charged then. What happened when they charged?
Well, they were just making a noise. I don't think they were effective in anything.
And meantime, they didn't blow up. This didn't affect the villa, the actual headquarters.
No, that wasn't damaged.
So in the morning, you say, what happened then?
They came with barrels and things, and this sheet was Red Cross printed, and they shouted, just get the dead and wounded. And
about how many dead and wounded were there of there?
I would think casualties. There could have been 100.
And how many British?
Well, we didn't have any casualties except the Sergeant Cook and some of them were buried, and we had to get them out.
Were they all right, or?
Yes. All right, they had cuts and bruises, and I think I was the worst with the crash across the top of my head, and I don't know how that had come out. I don't know what happened to my head. In the confusion of the whole thing, of course, you don't see that bit correctly. There's the rushing around doing this.
Had they used women at all as a cover for any of their?
Not on this occasion, because we didn't see them approaching. There could have been women, but I wouldn't.
Was it mostly dark throughout this?
It was at night, because I'd been. It was dark when I went up.
About what time would it have started, do you think, roughly?
I think possibly about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right, now, that was just to sort of, we dropped that in as a full account, because that is quite an interesting incident. Now, you left, we're coming really now to when you left Greece, though, which was after the, late, much later on, after that you'd been to Patras, and it was in April when you went. Do you remember the trip back? You didn't go by air this time, did you?
No, see, the Vildoran was the name of the ship.
And, where did you land? I think you went to Taranto,
yes.
And you got there on the 14th of April.
Yes.
Were you aware that the war was almost over?
Yes, we knew that. We didn't, at first, we thought they'd be second sending us to the second front in Normandy, because we knew things were fairly well tied up in Italy with the few troops they had left, because the 8th Army had been very, very much reduced. By sending divisions to about in Normandy. But we gathered that they were holding along and moving up So we didn't really didn't know anything about the trauma there was going to be about the Yugoslavs pinching the southern Austria and northern Italy.
Right, hang on, before we come to that, as you were moving up, there's just two parts that I've got from your notes. You were moving up. At one point, you were temporarily in command, because Worrell and Major Denny had gone.
I don't know why, but I was in command. We were in this huge transit camp. All we could do was, we did a lot of marching, you know, 70 troops marching. We've got there, there were no training areas, and there was a transit camp at by the docks. And it was just a question of waiting to see what was going to happen to us next. And I got the news that we had to move up to Ancona, and the instructions were there that the transport had to find its own way, but there would be the marching troops would go onto a troop ship in Toronto.
And which did you do?
First, not having commanded the battalion before, the first man I got hold of was the quartermaster, one Bert Newman, a very old soldier from the First World War. And I said, Bert, how would you like to do this? And he did the whole thing. Because he, so that was very easy, but I think I learned, first of all, go to the old hands and see how they. And so, we got the troops on the troop ship, and one little incident. When any military craft left Toronto Harbour, he went between two large towers, and there was a little ceremony. The guard turned out and viewed them, and I was told by the command, so I was told by the commander of the ship that I'd be required, and would I assemble the troops on deck? Well, most of them were on deck because there weren't any cabins, and line them up, and I had to salute when we passed the Italian flag. So there was a little ceremony, so I think that was about the only thing I ever did as commanding officer of the 16th of the NI. We got to Ancona, and we met up with the rest of them, and the CO had turned up. I think we went to a place called Bert Nora that we'd been to once before. But we met up there, and we're just waiting to see what the next thing. But we're just moving up Italy bit by bit.
Now, the next real thing, as I suppose, was the German capitulation in May. How did you feel when you heard the news yourself?
Well, we didn't know whether it was true because we'd heard about it a day or two beforehand. Of course, they had been taking large numbers of German prisoners. We heard all about this. We thought, well, that's the end of them. And it was the end of them, but they still hadn't officially declared that that was the end of the war, because we always felt we were being held back. He's going to make a last stand in the Alps, in those. Because they've been using it, we haven't been using it, but they've been using it, and you know all the passes and and we heard he was going to make the last desperate stand there, and we thought, now we are being saved for this. We've not been given any other jobs, so we're just totally in readiness. And
so
those few troops of the 8th Army were quite tired. They'd had a big job because they'd lost quite a number of units, and they'd borne the brunt of it. So we thought, yes, this is our job, to invade the Alps.
So it must have been a relief then in those
circumstances. Yes. So anyhow, by the time the official news came through, was get your hands on any vino. The Italians were really good, they said this, that, and the other. We had a party and went to Brazil. We first of all fired off all the very lights and the flashes and signal. We didn't fire, well, I suppose some live ammunition went off, but not officially. But all the lights went up in the air, and we had quite a party.
What was like that part? Because that party's quite famous amongst the battalion as a rip roaring affair. What do you remember of it, if anything?
Well, we had one before, a competition for the best decorated jeep.
What sort of decorations would they do? Because that's quite a feature of the DLI or the 16th Battalion.
Well, first of all, camouflage netting, but anything that would give a bit of colour, kind of cleaver. They got some balloons from somewhere. I don't know what they got them from, but they went round the battalions by. Yes, the Italians who had been retired, and we got some dresses from them, and what we called fat, there was more fraternization, of course, so we called them bits of fat, and we had a competition, so some of these younger officers in there. But there was just a huge laugh and drinking and absolutely relaxing. And,
did people get very drunk?
Yes. Two officers got very drunk and went off in a jeep for whatever reason and forgot that the bridge had been blown and they went down in the lift and were both badly injured.
Who were they? Do you remember?
Freddie Grease was one. And, I've forgotten the name, but I won't remember. Never saw them again. So, you know, anyhow, they obviously would survive, but there was a right off of the jeep which we couldn't afford. But, yes.
And what about the.
The other thing, of course, then we started a bit here. Those static units up in that area that had nice camps and flag poles and whitewashed stones, who are not even supporting troops, we then sent out parties to pinch their flags and anything stupid like that, and for all they had lights on and so on. But anything that was stupid, we were very good at.
Now, you were quite a senior officer then. Would you take part in all this?
Oh, yes. I'd be in the thicket.
What about the men? Did they have a separate party?
No, we were all mixed in.
It was a mixed party?
All mixed in, yes.
Now, after the next day, I presume you started to move off towards Austria, which was to be your role. What was the journey like up?
Okay. Well, it was very slow. You'll have to, again, remember there was going to be trouble at Trieste, which we knew about, because the New Zealanders had to get there before the Yugoslavs and Tito's were coming in to Trieste to claim it. And there was a race between the New Zealanders and the Yugoslavs to get in Trieste first. I think the Yugoslavs won by a few hours, but still the New Zealanders. So priority had to be given to the New Zealanders. That was to be their job. Trouble had been anticipated, as history shows. They were both living side by side without actually coming into conflict.
So what was it like, this slow march up? Were you marching or in trucks?
No, we were in trucks. We did some marching, just to keep the troops, you know, but you'll go on the next stage. At one stage, I think, we said, where's the next stop? And we were be told, so four of us went to see one and said, look, we'll have the day off. I don't think we asked permission. We're going to have the day off. And we made our way to Venice. And we thought, here we are, we've come all this fighting in Italy, we're going to pass Venice, which is just down the road. More than just down the road, but we thought it was too good an opportunity. So we went to Venice for this company commander, I think there were four company commanders, so that was equal. And we saw Venice and we found Costa Rica, they were open, and we just had a good look around, obviously not much in one day. And then we went back and caught up with the con at this, I don't know where it was, Padua, next stop. But we did meet up with them before where they were resting for the night. But what we were starting to see was the Yugoslavs were claiming all the smaller villages, and they had painted signs, Zito, Tito, and they were very much in command of the smaller villages and towns up there. And the only firing was against the Italian partisans, whose noses were being pushed out, who were also felt they were getting something that belonged to them. So there were clashes between them, but of course it wasn't our concern.
Neither of them were actually attacking you then?
No.
What about discipline of the men? You know, the war was over. That must have been like a relief to the men. Did discipline suffer, especially during a long, slow march like this?
No. You know, if you talk about discipline, and you'd been in the line and so on and so forth. All right, there were lapses of discipline, which were punished, but they knew they had to behave properly, and we had, by that time, a good team, NCOs, we worked with that thing. So anybody really stepping out of line, they were punished.
Was there any bad behaviour towards the civilians sometimes?
No.
Right, so you were moving on, you know, through May, round up to think, what's the next stage of the journey? You were moving into an area where the Yugoslavians were becoming more dominant.
Yes. Well, we... our long struggling past... Oh, I should have said, at our last stop, we had a good meal because we didn't know when we were going to get the next one, and we were warned. We don't know what's going to happen over the fight, so we fortify ourselves. And then we went over this winding pass, which of course the Germans had been done their best to destroy, so there were makeshift repairs, and it was quite frightening. I don't think we had any real casualties. There were some broken down vehicles that had been shunted off the road. But the next thing I really knew was when we were at dawn, we were over the top of the pass and the sun was rising and we saw this green and pleasant land of Austria. I then...
And that was the 13th of May?
Yes.
Yeah.
So on the... that was the 13th of May, decided, so it was the 14th when we got into Austria. And with the Jeep, we always had a camera full of things. So I just said, just follow the column, and I then lay down and have a sleep on the camera. And the next thing I knew, I heard church bells. We stopped at the place called Klagenfurt. Church bells were ringing. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, and I looked up, and here were civilians looking up, really chattering, and these were Austrians, so I had a good sleep. And then we were told we had to go on as fast as possible northwards because the Russians were coming down, and we had to stop them somewhere. So we pushed on to a place, to the river Muir, which had been a temporary line agreed with the Russians, and we arrived at a small town called Unsmark. In the main street, there was a bridge at the top, which was absolutely full of Russians, not in any arrogant postures, but as though they were having the afternoon of leaning against the bridge, but there were a lot of them. And I think this was, they'd been told they hadn't come further across the river. We were given company areas, and I went into a very nice little guest house. The lady couldn't be more delighted to welcome us, so I put the officers in there, and meanwhile we found billets for the men, and we settled down for the night. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I was wakened. It's the first time I'd slept between sheets with my clothes off. I was told to go to battalion headquarters and ordered to take my company with D Company. And I was given a route. I had to go through Blyberg. I said, but that's way back from where we've just come. They said, yes, there's some trouble there.
Did they explain anything more?
No. They just said they were having some trouble there. Well, having seen all these signs, and Zito, Tito, and of course, whilst the Russians had been stopping there, the Tito's lot were in all towns.